Hey there, Tech Intersect listeners. Have you ever encountered naysayers claiming crypto is too volatile, a total scam, or a hacker's paradise? Well, it's time to dispel these persistent myths and reveal the truth. It's exactly why I wrote Digital Money Demystified, available now wherever books are sold. And this book is your golden ticket from being crypto curious to radiating crypto confidence. Navigate the crypto world with clarity and conquer the chaos. Get your copy today to learn about my journey, separate fact from fiction, and maybe even embark on a transformative journey yourself. Don't stop there. Enhance your learning experience exponentially. Join the DMD Insiders Membership Club. It's a gateway to premier coaching, engaging community, and unparalleled content that complements the insights in the book. Together, we'll unlock the potential of digital money and stride confidently into the future. Visit digitalmoneydemystified.com, grab your guide to the crypto universe, and become an esteemed member of our Insiders Club. Let's decode the digital dollar and invest in your crypto-savvy future right now.
My name is Carmel Cadet. I am the founder and CEO of MTech. And this is Tech Intersect. I think what a lot of people missed at the beginning of the Web3 phase is that there needs to be trust in any ecosystem, regardless of what technology you're going to use. The moment you talk about money, someone has to trust that what you're giving them is what it is, and that they can turn around and use it to do something else.
Welcome to Tech Intersect. I'm your host, Tanya Evans, and my life and work exist at the heart of law, business, and technology. Yeah, I've earned a few fancy titles and degrees over the years, but the bottom line is I'm a writer, speaker, teacher, and lifelong learner, and I'm really excited that you've joined me on this journey. So what is Tech Intersect? Well, it's authentic, empowering conversations with really interesting guests who demystify complex topics to prepare you for the future, because your future is now, and it exists where law, business, and tech intersect. Get ready to listen, learn, and leverage. Let's get started. Welcome to Tech Intersect, the premier podcast at the intersection of law, business, technology, and the future of work, wealth, and innovation. I am your fearless host, Professor Tanya Evans, owner of Advantage Evans. And today we are diving into an exciting, a transformative discussion, the case for a Web3 CBDC, central bank digital currency, with none other than Carmel Cadet. She is the founder and CEO of MTech. She's a beacon of innovation in financial services, central banking technology, and blockchain. And she's dedicated to financial inclusion and development of resilient financial market infrastructures across the globe. Definitely has an impressive background that I definitely am going to tease out here. She is no stranger to the Tech Intersect podcast, and she is a friend of the show. We had a conversation back in 2021, actually, when the world was ending. Evidently, we're still here. It was not a good time at all, but we thrived and survived. And today she comes back to share her insights in the pioneering work of MTech around the globe, basically enabling central banks from the continent of Africa to the Caribbean to transition to the digital currency era. Plus, special offer, we'll talk more about this at the end for our listeners. Listen to the end. Get the first month free on MTech's CBDC innovation kit for fintechs and developers. So let's explore all of that. We'll talk about all of that and more in a moment. But first, my sister, Carmel, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure. And I know we want to do this more often, but I'm really happy to be here. It's always a pleasure to drive the conversation. You're driving quite a bit of a conversation around education in this space. And CBDC is kind of the little corner of the world that we kind of dabble in.
Absolutely. But small no more, because so transformative, so important, so essential is We're entering the end of the first three innings and the beginning of the fourth, if we're to have a rough sports analogy. When I think about where we are from January 3rd, 2009 for Bitcoin and where we are now in 2024, March of 2024, I think it's particularly significant to have this conversation with you during Women's History Month here in the States as well. And in light of what I'll be talking about this week in my virtual series, Black Women and Wealth, there's no better time to talk about your origin story of MTech, or what motivated you to focus on assisting central banks in adopting modern technologies for financial inclusion. It's a big question that you can kind of distill for us, and then we'll start our conversation there.
I'll start just a little bit before MTech. It is part of the broader story. I'm originally from Haiti. And as we stand today, last night, Haiti's prime minister resigned in the ongoing troubles of my dear beloved country. I was born and raised there. Coming into my late teens into the U.S., I became fascinated by the concept of financial services and how it impacts lives. Financial services sector, if you will, you know, from getting access to money, how do you buy, how do you save, how do you build wealth financially in other ways? It's something that became kind of a question for me on an ongoing basis as far as why are only rich countries have good financial products, have good financial access? Why only developed markets have access to credit to grow a business? And then as I went through my golden years, early golden years, if you will, in the U.S., kind of really learning the environment that is the United States as far as being able to open a bank account, having a CD was a thing for quite a bit on, you know, getting a little bit more interest, money market funds. You know, you get your first credit card, you build your credit. You can go shopping, you can pay for school, you can buy a car, you can buy a house, the concept of credit became quite visible to me as far as how people get better education, live longer because you can go to the hospital and you can get all kind of access financial services. So for me, it was always a question on how can I help build infrastructures that makes this available in other markets. Not particularly the bad side of credit, if you will, kind of like the over-ramping and very money-hungry side of taking advantage of consumers, but just access to financial services for you to grow a business, for you to send the kids to school and pay for healthcare and stuff. But I didn't know what to do about it yet. So I like to tell the story that my mom told me to go to school and get a job.
Basically, we're all taught, get a good education, get a good job and ride it out.
That's right. For sure. That's how I ended up in IBM, and kind of like the marriage between the curiosity of financial services then became technology. Really thinking about big, complex problems in the world that you can solve with technology. So I fell in love with it. And then the last piece of that came when it comes to business school. So I like to say IBM didn't want to pay me more money, but they paid for my executive MBA. So I did my executive MBA and really fell in love with the concept of how to create value, how to capture value, how to impact lives, and then married that with the passion around financial services, financial inclusion, financial access, and then technology. Fast forward to around 2017, I like to say I got bit by the blockchain bug. I heard about blockchain before I heard about Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And the learning of that for me, I think, is definitely fundamental to how I see the space. I have a great appreciation for Bitcoin. And for anybody who's listening, stick to your plan. Have a plan and stick to it.
Right. And don't at me. Don't at Carmel.
Stick to it. I executed on my plan, you know, kind of hedging and continue to grow. There are ways, there are best practices on how to build wealth. There's, you know, risk appetite and everything else that you can think about. We'll dive into that. But that's really how I got into this space. So the idea of blockchain for me became an answer to the question that I was asking 20 years before that. How can I build better financial markets? to lower the barrier to entry, barrier to access financial services, and realizing that, yes, fintech innovation is definitely a great way of delivering product to users in a way that understands them, in a way that addresses their life needs, and continue to expand how people experience financial services. The idea of how can infrastructure work, the underlying pipes of what makes money move around, is something that really, if you're not in the space, you don't wake up really thinking about. You just expect your direct deposit to be in your bank account when it's payday. You want your card to work even when there's no money in there. You know, you don't want no NSF fees, like nothing like that, right? We just want the system to work. But the truth is, as I was working at IBM, and as you continue to research and understand how the financial sector work, understanding that that pipe underneath it all is not holding up pretty well. And it's actually over time, as technologies become more adopted and more available, you realize that, okay, you might have an old Toyota Corolla, but now, you know, you have kids, you have a family, you have this, you have that, you might want a Volvo kind of thing, right? And the Volvo might not have been available before, but now it is. Do you make the decision to transition to a safer infrastructure? Or do you stick to, not to say that Toyota Corollas are not safe, do not at me. Thinking through accessing and tapping into better infrastructure, better solution, better technologies to have financial market infrastructure.
This is really important. I see you, and you take on the fight that sometimes comes in the crypto environment, where we have this a microcosm of a microcosm. We have the tech world, we have the finance world, as I say, kind of come together, they have a baby, and then we have the world of cryptographically secured assets, right? Using cryptography to encrypt messaging that isn't just about the messaging of information, but now we're focused on value. This is kind of airdropped in the midst of an existing hyper-regulated industry of finance. It's the first use case. The reason where, as you were talking and said, you were introduced first to blockchain, this time-stamped digital record of transactional data, first in on the Bitcoin blockchain, then 2014, 2015 in the Ethereum space, and then we're off to the races, right? But to think that we would forever operate in isolation without the idea of what onboarding and offboarding looks like, the work that is required in order to bring a legacy system to not just the future, can we just get it to today, let alone going forward, and all this, you know, kind of building the plane while we're flying it to take the best parts of, to the extent, you know, take the best parts of an existing system, make it more efficient, more equitable, more accessible, and what that looks like for everybody who's not necessarily going to have their own wallet on day one. What does that look like to connect the legacy system to the future? And so much of that is going to be driven by digital dollars or stable coins, but also central bank digital currencies that skip over, at least in the United States, this idea of a retail layer, right, to connect and have access so that you can participate in the economy, in the system, and be a whole represented person. That's always what I've heard you say in the past. Talk us through kind of the resistance point around that in connecting TradFi to crypto and to DeFi.
One obstacle to that is the perception around what Bitcoin is supposed to be and what blockchain is supposed to be, which is the antithesis of central banking. Mm-hmm. Over the years, if not happened already for some, is to really understand kind of first principles of how financial markets really work. There was a time without central banking. There's a reason we have central banking. The idea of regulation of rules and consumer protection, whether we want to believe it or not, us as human left alone will not do very well and have proven to not do very well to that. And there's a difference between having a decentralized economy for the purpose of access, for the purpose of decision-making and choices and freedom to choose what financial assets you decide to have. And then there is the concept of decentralizing who creates money And what is that store of value, that medium of exchange? And I think what a lot of people missed at the beginning of the Web3 phase is that there needs to be trust in any ecosystem, regardless of what technology you're going to use. The moment you talk about money, someone has to trust that what you're giving them is what it is, and that they can turn around and use it to do something else. Meaning that you have to have that relationship, and then you get into what is the user interface on how do you do that. But a big obstacle was that perception of what is money and how does it work? How does it scale? What make people actually use it? And I don't think it's lost on anyone that you're going to see a jump in adoption, whether that's the way we wanted it or not, with the means of ETFs. It brought legitimacy. It brought a view that, okay, somebody knows how to protect consumers with this asset. I don't have to jump through their hoops of understanding it. But if I understand that this is kind of digital gold and I want to participate in digital gold, this just addressed a user interface or an engagement. It brought it closer to what I know and what I feel comfortable with. And I think that's very, very important. That is the case for cash. Our case from the beginning has been cash is the most interoperable, the most inclusive, and the most secure form of asset. And people get into argument on, well, central banks value our currencies and they do this. It's like central banks don't have the mandate to maintain what the FX volatility is. They have a mandate to maintain price stability, and they have jurisdiction over their local government, their local jurisdiction, not over the rest of the world. And supply and demand and economics are going to continue to drive that. So you had the perception of it, of what Bitcoin versus CBDC could be. And then you have the economics of it that brings us closer to, this is how people behave. If we're going to build a CBDC and kind of see the opportunity into the Web3 world, how can we make the most interoperable, inclusive, and used asset Web3 enabled as well?
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favourite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
Have you ever found yourself puzzled, wondering if cryptocurrency is just a fleeting trend, a scam, or perhaps the future? Hi, I'm Dr. Tanya Evans, and I'm here to introduce you to my new book, Digital Money Demystified, Your Ultimate Guide to Deciphering the Crypto Maze. As a legal policy and crypto education expert, I've crafted this book to cut through the chaos, debunk the myths, and tackle the FUD, that's fear, uncertainty, and doubt. From captivating headlines to meticulously sourced data, I guide you through the promises and the pitfalls of digital assets. With 12 chapters and 10 myths dispelled, Digital Money Demystified is designed for investors, business owners, and professionals eager to navigate the digital economy. It's more than just a book. It's a tool for economic empowerment that directs you safely and confidently from cash to crypto. Say goodbye to bewilderment and hello to enlightenment. Transform from crypto curious to confident, sidestep those scammers, and embrace the future of work, wealth, and creativity. Grab your copy of Digital Money Demystified today at the book's companion website, digitalmoneydemystified.com, or wherever books are sold. This is the right book, the right voice at the right time. Don't miss out on the digital revolution. Stop by digitalmoneydemystified.com now.
When you think about connecting various countries on the continent of Africa, when you think about the Caribbean, one of the biggest issues is remittances. the idea of using central bank digital currencies to facilitate cross-border payments, how that might reduce costs, increase efficiency, international transactions in this increasingly global world. Talk about the potential impact of CBDCs on remittances, cross-border in particular.
So cross-border, I think it's important to realize that technology is not the primary problem when it comes to cross-border. It's really about policy. And essentially, you have markets that can afford their currencies, and their currencies are in high demand outside of their jurisdictions, like the US dollar. And then you have the reality on the ground into a developing market that is receiving a lot of another country's currency for the purpose of remittances. There is essentially kind of a bittersweet or two edges to the sword, if you will. On one side, of course, remittances support about 50% of GDP in some countries. The country is running on remittances. As a central bank, of course, you want that economic boost into your economy, that is remittances. But at the same time, there is a risk, and many central banks and countries, and I tell people this, there are lessons to be learned before we really jump too far ahead. There are countries that at some point have migrated and depended on a foreign currency in order for them to survive. And what happens in those situations is that the central bank really also struggles. At the same time, they want the economic stimulus, but they struggle with that because then you start losing the concept of sovereignty. If you don't have your own local currency, you don't have your own local economy. And I tell people the Fed does not wake up every day thinking about an African country to make monetary policy. The supply and demand of US dollar, or the supply of it, is very specifically in the context of the US. So if you're another country and you're relying on that supply to feed you, you are putting yourself at a very, very close impact position for any policy that comes from that country to have a greater impact on you. And that's why the moment something happens in the US, it is amplified in a lot of different markets. So for cross-border opportunity, what we talk to central banks about, it's really about understanding the use cases and how do you tie what the technology can do to other use cases. There is clearly efficiency capabilities. So between taking 3 days, people, you know, again, if you're not in this space, you really don't think about it. If you have your app and you send money to someone, it might appear within 5 minutes, but the money really did not transfer in 5 minutes. Inefficiencies that end up pushing up the cost and keeping the cost high. In addition to that, depending on what market you are in, the exchange rate that is being used can be very expensive in order to deliver the local currency, given how complicated cross-border and remittance providers have to manage local currency accounts in different countries. They have to source the local currency, and then they have to have a relationship in the US where the US dollar is being parked, and so on. The pipe of it, the infrastructure of it, is definitely not ideal and not optimal compared to when you look at something like USDC and USDT on what they can do from a cross-border perspective, right? So you have now a USDT or Web3 enable cross-border payments, period, regardless if it's remittance, trade, and so on, or payroll versus a SWIFT model, then you can clearly validate the efficiencies, the opportunity for cost reduction, also the opportunity for better money laundering traceability and auditability. I would like to think that we would want kind of that Web3 infrastructure to not bring forward, or at least try to minimize, the problems that we had in the Web2 world and the Web1 world, because that's what makes the policies even more complicated. The more money laundering and KYC problems we have, you know, regulators have the tendency to kind of like throw more bodies at it, throw more rules at it, which oftentimes does not solve the problem, but that's the only lever they have. So how can the infrastructure by design think about those problems? That's something that we're also looking at, and how to make that very seamless and interoperable with different networks.
And let's continue along that line, because one of the, when I think of pushback to central bank digital currencies, my own concerns about financial privacy, some of the security concerns, I think you kind of mentioned some things earlier. Can we drill down a bit on what the answer is to privacy concerns, financial surveillance, security concerns as well, not only necessarily with the infrastructure, but the ability of a friendly government one day to turn rogue and kind of use central bank digital currencies, not for good, but for harm and exclusion. So kind of address those issues.
Thank you for asking. I usually take the opportunity to share how we're thinking about it, but also identifying the important components of the stack of where this can happen and what to look out for. In the Web3 world, the concept of private key and public key are very fundamental when it comes to access and privacy. And there's the concept of privacy and there's a concept of control. So those are two layers under which CBDC is usually kind of talked about. Is, can the government take my money? The other thing is, can the government see what I'm doing? I like to tell people on the privacy side, we have to be honest on what kind of conversations that we're having. If you're comfortable with Bitcoin, you're comfortable with having some level of visibility around a transaction. If you have Coinbase or some other mechanism, there's definitely a way to trace back to your account, to your VPN. There's a KYC component that was done over time. So if you're comfortable in that space, then you're comfortable with some level of transparency when it comes to your transactions, as long as your private information is protected by someone. And there are laws in place to protect you as a user when it comes to your data and your activities. That said, the things that we have to look for are the regulatory frameworks and the legal policies that govern any CBDC that is implemented, because that's where the capabilities and the mandates are going to come from. I have not talked to one central bank that asked us, give us private data.
You said literally none, not one.
None, absolutely none. And I'll add to that to say there's actually a hedge in the system, a natural hedge in the system. And what that means is that there is a natural disincentive that's already there. Is the fact that central banks don't actually want the risk of being exposed to individual data, because then they become liable for anything that goes, whether it's access or visibility or anti-data privacy laws. That also becomes a natural hedge. But fair enough, people would say, well, laws can change. The next government that comes on board can change it and so on. That is absolutely true. And you should continue to monitor and see how your government approaches data privacy. If they decide to do CBDC, what are the rules? What is the governance mechanism and how keys are going to be managed? Which brings me to the other point. Key management framework in CBDC, it's a very important policy consideration for central banks. What we have presented and how we design and build for is to say central banks don't have access to your private keys. That's just, for starters, basic design. It's either you have a third party hosting your key for you that you decide, that you select, the same way you decide to do Gmail versus Yahoo versus Xmail when it comes out, right? you create an account and you trust that provider to maintain your account information for you to validate and sign up into your account every time. Or you can decide to host your own keys. Here's the truth, though. We also have to be honest about certain things. My mom is not going to want to manage her own keys. I can guarantee you that.
You said full stop.
Full stop. She's trying to make sure that I book my doctor's appointments, not manage her crypto keys. And you get into certain very realistic use cases that make the argument for choice. It should be about choice. It should be about educated choices. and this is why the education is so important in this space, as far as like whether you decide to have Coinbase manage your private key for you, is it a all or nothing as far as if a third party manages your keys, that means your tokens are not your coins are not your coins? I disagree with that. I think there's a legal world that makes third party key management providers not forego the ownership of the tokens for the user, right? Those are two different things. You're providing privacy and a third party kind of an intermediary role. That doesn't mean that the token itself changes ownership and is now your exchange token and you're subject to their bankruptcy laws and everything else that we learned during the FTX saga. So those are very interesting. So the regulatory frameworks and the key management framework and rules that a central bank decides to have, those are the two ways to look at when it comes to privacy and control.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
When you think about the pushback, maybe risk aversion, a number of concerns about adopting this technology, creating this bridge between TradFi, what were some of the questions, the considerations, the causes for pause for governments, and how did you work around that? You know, and kind of list the roster of countries with whom you've positively impacted to move forward with MTEC. That is not insignificant. You have to go into rooms. You have to convince people not only of the technology to move past their personal and professional aversions and the sensationalism of headlines and the reality of issues in a nascent industry, an emerging industry. That's just kind of beginning this concept of maturation. We're a long way away from there, but we aren't where we began. But you had to do the work of advocacy for the ecosystem and also to get government officials comfortable with moving forward. So what was that process like?
It feels like a blur now.
You're like, I don't even know.
We just walked into the rooms and said something. No, but there's something to be said about looking at the client as a client segment. I think that's something that central banks never really experienced. Technology providers just looking at them as just enterprise clients. They have needs just like any other commercial banks or any big business, any large institution need needs. Where we connected, the point of connection for us was the fact that the timing when we started talking to them was the beginning of a need, a clear need around digital transformation. We launched in 2019, COVID happened in 2020. We signed our first central bank MOU during COVID. It was all via email, all via Zoom. The first onboarding testing and pilot that we did, we Zoomed it out, right? It was literally, we hired locally, we had someone, but no one was going to the office. Even at the central bank, no one was going into the office. What we've been able to tap into is how this can be a win-win. Their legal mandate to drive financial stability really brings them closer to having financial inclusion, because the more inclusivity you have into the financial system, the more impactful your guidelines and your regulatory frameworks can be. If you have people outside of that financial market, they're not being impacted if you lower interest rate or if you increase interest rate and so on. So there's a natural incentive for the central bank to find new ways of driving certain outcomes. So we really anchored in those outcomes when it comes to financial inclusion and resilience in financial markets. And now how do we bring technology to enable them to do that? But with the reality and the context in which they're entering that journey, which is the fintech era, which is the Web3 era, and what does that mean for that journey for them? The big sell at the time, the big hurdle that we had to go through is cloud computing, cloud software. Being able to walk into Central Bank and sell SaaS and software as a service solution was really kind of something new for them. And they've navigated through, and we had to do a lot of education on how we partner with Microsoft, how our solution could work without them having to buy new hardware and having data centers and so on. We still have more work to do. I mean, I think from an infrastructure and cloud computing, you know, data residency, data replication, how do you provide data center capabilities locally that have a certain coverage and so on? We continue to work with Microsoft on things like this. But finding now the case to say fintech innovation can be your path to achieving financial inclusion in your country. And we understand that it comes with risk. Here is how we can help you manage the risk better while tapping and unlocking the possibilities and the benefits of that. And I think Bank of Ghana is a perfect example for us. We will have more central banks that kind of everybody's on their own timeline and have their own communication strategy. But you'll see more and more central banks emerge with that model after working with us. Is really understanding the role of digitization, digital transformation, tapping into fintech ecosystem, fintech innovation to drive some of the mandates. And then also there's a love story to be told about Web3 and regulators. The concept of money laundering and fraud and things that they have a mandate to fix has been almost impossible in the previous world, but today it is more possible to achieve with Web3 components, Web3 technology, and us helping them navigate that and understand that. That's the work. And that becomes who we are. That's part of our routine. That's part of our go-to-market. We become your partner in not only technology, but navigating through those different technological advances.
That's fantastic. This is a story that's never been told. The love letter.
The love letter.
I love the framing. I love the framing. You heard it here first. But as we close out, talk to me about the CBDC Innovation Kit. So I want you to elaborate on what the kit includes, how fintechs and developers can leverage it, and we'll kind of talk about what offer you can offer to the listeners to get started.
Yeah, sounds good. So we, of course, started working with central banks around their journey of CBDC, digital regulatory sandbox. You'll always hear us talk about regulatory side and currency side, because they matter. They both matter at the central bank level. However, when we were building the CBDC, we noticed that no CBDC infrastructure was open in order to test and bring that stakeholder engagement and that fintech innovation to it. Everyone kind of waited for a central bank to test it. And then within their closed testing scope, they would do that very privately and closely. And sometimes you had other central banks who wished they knew what could be done without having to go through the process, or before they went through the process of piloting, can this be done? So there were, you know, a couple of examples and reference points in the market. We wanted to show what fintech innovation could do with CBDC infrastructure. And opening it up in a kind of set of pre-built components, we have app.mtech.com, app.mtech.com, where any fintech can go and create an account and start testing with a set of APIs. We provision you with a wallet that has some dummy tokens. We call it Beyond Cash, BYDC. And that is kind of, for us, this is what we see as the future, right? The ability to, at scale, deliver central banking services in a way that can still be safe. Meaning this token that you're testing, yes, it is a CBDC innovation kit, but we make it clear, this is not a real token. However, when we do sell a central bank, when we do enable a central bank to do that, this is the infrastructure that we are deploying for them. They will be able to give you access to wallets. They will be able to allow fintechs to connect, to build solutions on top of that. Get started now, right? This is a future that's coming. Start thinking about interoperability. Start thinking about integration into third-party systems, into different use cases. So we have different plans where you can be totally a self-serve type of startup, or if you are an enterprise, our team can also do design thinking workshop with you and kind of help you start thinking about what does CBDC mean for you? What are some of the business models that you can develop around this? Because it's all about the money, by the way. For the ecosystem to really make sense of it, you have to make the case on how is this going to either lower our cost or increase revenue or make me make more money in somewhere, you know, whether it's launching a new product. So that's what the CBDC Innovation Kit is all about. It is for fintechs that want to test out CBDC, Web3 enabled CBDC infrastructure. It's the same infrastructure that we launched for the ECD hackathon. And for anyone who's listening today to this podcast, to this program, get the first month at no cost to test out our CBDC Innovation Kit. And we think that that is a, whether you're thinking about an R&D project and you want a set of APIs to build with, whether you're trying to deploy CBDC-based products for the future, and being able to contribute to formalizing this. And part of the conversations that we have with fintechs that sign up for our CBDC Innovation Kit, what are the use cases that you're building for? We have a fintech right now building government pay solutions, and that fed our requirements to think about how do we introduce the next V2 of our APIs, of our wallet, of our rules engine. Join us, right? Be part with us to kind of help us think through how this would be as you build your solution as well.
So many times we talk about investment in cryptocurrencies or NFTs. Other types of investment that are critical and essential is the connection to the build, that building the infrastructure, the continued innovation around startups in the space of building the infrastructure, building the industry, building the rails on which all of this functions. It's so critically important, and particularly for Black and Brown folks throughout the diaspora, particularly for women. We're talking about Women's History Month here in the United States. Part of investment is your professional investment in the development of the future of work and wealth and innovation. And this is a perfect bridge for this. Carmel Cadet, a founder and CEO of MTech, doing all the things and doing them oh so well, providing opportunities in a host of ways. How can people, obviously, I'm going to drop all of your information in the show notes, but nothing better than hearing it from you, how best to keep up with you and to take advantage of the offer that you have today.
Yes, the idea of connecting and understanding the infrastructure component, I think it's a really exciting space for people who are trying to come into this space. Whether you are an engineer or you're a product manager or you are, you know, you just want to get involved and understand what crypto is, there is a role for everyone. I would tell people this is a new thing. It does take time to get educated, to understand where do you fit in. And then once you do, being able to participate, kind of raise your hand, get involved, get access, start reading, start engaging for you to do that. And for me, you can find me on LinkedIn at Carmel Cadet, also on X at Carmel Cadet, mtech.com, E-M-T-E-C-H is our website. And I am mostly on those two platforms. I talk a lot on those two platforms. So please follow, engage, leave comments. And I always have some random thoughts about whatever is going on. So it's a good way to keep up with what we're doing as well.
Excellent. Carmel Cadet, MTech. I look forward to continuing to nation build with you, continuing to move the needle here. We are nation building and really a whole new world. And so few people are still plugged in, and we are still early, but you don't have to do everything, but you have to do something to continue to keep pace with the seismic shift that we are now witnessing. And it's through the leadership of folks like you that make it all possible. So I appreciate you this very much, and I look forward to our next opportunity.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much for having me. And as far as freedom is concerned, it's an exciting time for people really to participate in a new economy like this.
Outstanding. Thank you for closing that loop. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Tech Intersect podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you love it, please tell the world. If not, go ahead and tell me. And in either case, drop a comment or ping me on social media at IPProfEvans with the hashtag TechIntersect. And finally, a quick reminder on digital safety. There are a lot of scammers out there impersonating me and others, and I need your help. Now hear this, and remember, I will never slide into your DMs to say peace and blessings or hey, and I will never reach out to solicit your time or your money on social media, like ever. I'm not a trader. I am an educator and an attorney licensed in 4 states. Thank you very much. I'm here to inform, inspire, and empower. No cap, and definitely no Forex. So be careful, make good choices, and remember, I developed an entire free masterclass about the topic of digital safety in the crypto space. So check out secureyourcryptobag.com for more information. That's secureyourcryptobag.com. All right, that's all for this episode. Until next time, continue to shine.